Welcome to the Messages Podcast with Every Nation NYC. We are here for you to know God, grow together, discover purpose, and make a difference in New York City and beyond. Please check out our Facebook and Instagram at Every Nation NYC and enjoy the message.
All right. Hello, Every Nation. It's good to be here with you guys. How are you doing tonight? Yeah, somebody's doing good. My name is Nathan. I am the pastor of our PM service here, and man, we've had a full couple of weeks. You guys know what I'm talking about? It's been huge here in our church. We hosted an enormous event called Mental Health or Mental Wellness. It was a poorly named event. It was a long named Mental Health, Wellness, and God in New York City, and it was massive. It was phenomenal. And then we had a follow up event this last Thursday. Then we had a men's breakfast yesterday, and our speaker was incredible. It was a true rags to riches and the grace of God on his life. My favorite line of the breakfast yesterday was, "And that's how I became a gigolo for a year." True story. And then now he owns 30 McDonald's and is a father of six and is an incredible man of God. So wherever you are tonight, whatever life has brought to you, it can be turned and used by God to your good and for his glory. And so incredible stuff can come out of your life. Tonight, we're going to continue in our Casket Empty series. The first letter, C, here stands for creation. And so we're in Genesis, walking through the Genesis story, all about creation. We're going to walk through the whole Bible, going through all the letters of Casket Empty, from creation to Abraham to Sinai and so on and so forth over the next year. And can I just kind of let you guys in on like just what brings me immense joy? Is that, like, can I have a moment of vulnerability with you guys? I don't know if you're going to like this or not. We laid out this series, and we kind of read our Bibles, me, Pastor Ron, Pastor Adam in New Jersey, and we just mapped it out, right? We just laid in kind of where we are in the Bible with dates, right? We just pushed it on out, right? And so far, there have been like 4 to 5 just miraculous alignments as we go through. Let me give you an example. On Father's Day, guess what the topic is? Guess what comes up? Abraham, the father of our faith. Next week is the Tower of Babel, or Babel, which has a New Testament counterpart of Pentecost. Guess what day it is next week? It's Pentecost Sunday, right? We didn't plan that. God planned that. Some other just incredible things happened. We had a speaker that was lined up to come in and talk about gender and God's design on gender. That we scheduled him like in January, and then what came up? But Genesis and how we were created in God's image. That we didn't plan that. God planned that. And just as a pastor that believes that I serve a sovereign God and that he's smarter than me, that just brings me a lot of joy, right? That just brings me a lot of rest, knowing that God is working harder than me. Or maybe not harder, but at least a little bit smarter. And so tonight we're back in Genesis, and we're looking at Noah. Anybody heard of this guy? Yeah? Any Sunday school fans out there? Who built the ark? Noah. Who built the ark? Brother Noah built the ark. No? No? All right. I did this same thing in Scotland, and everybody was right on. I thought it was an American thing. Apparently, it's a Scottish thing. But here's the thing. You sang about it maybe as a kid, or you read about it in a study Bible if you grew up in church. But I'm going to give away the end of the story. Everybody dies. And so I've entitled this message, "Where Sunday School Goes to Die." It's Noah. It's where Sunday school, when your cute little kid Bible. Oh, seriously, that's the name of the... Where Sunday school goes to die. It's Noah. Because you read this as an adult. You read this with new eyes. It's like, with the eyes of injustice and with equality and with all this going on in the world. And you read Noah and you go, holy cow, what's going on here? Somebody make sense of this. And that's why God gave me you, hopefully. Or God gave you me. That's what I meant. But I'm going to try tonight, by the grace of God, to bring some sense into how God, how a good God, how a loving God could bring a flood. What brought us to this moment? how did this happen, and where do we go from here? In order to get there, if you read Noah out of context, it's a little bit like walking into the middle of a bar fight. Somebody's just cracked a bar stool over somebody else's head, and you go, well, clearly the guy with the bar stool is the bad guy. Not necessarily. Not necessarily. What's happened before this moment? What led up to this moment? And so I want to walk a little bit. Normally, I don't cover so much context. Normally, I just jump right into the passage. Tonight, we're going to walk up to this moment where God sends a flood and everybody dies. And hopefully, it'll make a little bit more sense once we get there and once we've walked through it. So God builds the world. Beautiful, holy, immaculate. Each day, he builds line upon line. He makes it good. He makes it a place where heaven and earth are going to live together in harmony, where God and people are going to walk this thing out together. The word that we use is it was a temple. It was our first temple. It was where heaven and earth were supposed to connect in this space. But it quickly breaks. The people in this garden, the people in this world reject God. They say, my will over thy will, my way over thy way. And they choose to have the world on their terms rather than God's terms. And they reject him and push him out of their lives. This creates incredible brokenness on every level. It breaks their relationship with God. It breaks their relationship with each other. It breaks their relationship with themselves. They used to be comfortable being naked. Now they're naked and ashamed. They have deep shame, deep uncomfortableness in their own skin. It also breaks their relationship with the earth. All of a sudden, all productivity, childbearing for women, work for men, the relationship in their home, everything becomes broken. It's catastrophically broken. Into this brokenness, God injects a picture and a promise. He first makes a promise. He says, out of the line of this woman, there's going to be an offspring that's going to come and crush the head of this snake, this one who's lied and brought in all of this, right? You know, the story that the snake lies, lies to the woman. She believes it. The man's there. He also takes the fruit. So he says, there's one that's going to come from this woman, from the line of this woman. There's an offspring that's going to come and crush the head of the serpent. And he also, at the end of the story, he skins two animals and gives the man and the woman new garments of skin. And so this is a picture of God's covering, God's grace. Even in this moment, God is giving his grace to this couple. So there's a picture and there's a promise. From here, things get a lot worse, a lot more quickly. Eve, the woman in the garden, her and her husband have a child. And Eve is very excited about this child. It records this in Genesis 4. She says, I've been given a man by the help of the Lord. What does she think is happening here? She thinks, I've got the promise. The promised child is here. The promised one, the one that's going to come, the snake slayer, he's here. I've been given a man, the promised man, by the help of the Lord. This guy's name is Cain. If you've been in church for a while, you know where this is going. Cain ends up killing his brother. Cain drives the brokenness that Adam and Eve, his parents, experienced deeper into the earth. And the same breaking that happens for his parents happens in a deeper level here. He absolutely has deep animosity towards God. He, instead of just breaking his relationship with somebody else, he actually kills his family member. There's a total denial of self. God says, sin is crouching at your door. It desires to have you. You must rule over it. And instead of ruling over it, he totally gives into it. It's a total break in himself. When God approaches him and says, hey, where's your brother? He says, am I my brother's keeper? The answer is absolutely yes. He's totally lost who he is. He's totally lost his responsibilities. He's totally lost all bearing upon himself. Furthermore, his relationship with the earth is totally broken. God says, your brother's blood is crying out to me from the ground. It's crying out for vengeance upon you. Now the earth that you're supposed to be bringing forth fruitfulness is now bringing forth judgment on you. Totally broken. So you can see the breaking that happens in Genesis 3 now goes so deep in Genesis 4. Things start to spiral out of control, and it goes even deeper because after Cain and Abel, Abel's dead now, Adam and Eve have another son named Seth. And what begins to happen is that the Bible tracks two lines, one from the line of Cain that gets worse and worse and worse, and one from the line of Seth that tries to hang in there with God. Some cool stuff happens, but generally not as much as what's happening on the other line. When you track through the line of Cain, it's a line of total self-reliance. They rely entirely on what they can do, what they can build, what they can find. And it ends with this guy, it climaxes with this guy named Lamech. Say that with me, Lamech. You guys are great tonight. Let's try this again, Lamech. Great, we're getting there. Lamech. Lamech is such a... words do not suffice in church. I've got words, but I can only say them outside of church. He's such a jerk, let's just call him a jerk, that he writes a song about himself and sings it to not his one wife, but to his two wives. So he takes two wives. He's the first guy that we recorded history in the Bible that takes two wives. Don't do it. Don't do that. I know the Bible talks a lot about that, but it never turns out well. All right, you just track that through. It never works good for the guy or the women. All right, so Lamech. He says to his two wives, he says, Ada and Zilda, hear my voice, you wives of Lamech. Listen to what I have to say. I've killed a man for wounding me, a young man for striking me. If Cain's revenge was sevenfold, then Lamech's will be seventyfold. Right. So what he's saying is, Cain had this protection, this mark from God, this grace from God to protect him. I'm better than God. I will avenge myself 70-fold. Forget the 7-fold. I will avenge myself 70-fold. And by the way, I've killed guys for just looking at me the wrong way. It goes from a thing of shame to a thing of pride, right? So what's happening here? The world is just spiraling out of control. Meanwhile, in Seth's line, they start to call. Seth was also a son who was born... And he also had a son, and his name was Enosh. And at that time, people began to call on the Lord. And then later in Seth's line, you get this guy named Enoch. And he walks with God and is taken. He has such a close relationship with God that the Lord's just like, I've had enough of you being away from me. Come on up here. And Enoch was no more, and he walked with God. And then you get Methuselah, who lives the very longest life that's ever been lived. Again, a picture of God's blessing. And then Seth's line also ends with a guy named Lamech. So we had a Lamech over here and a different Lamech over here through Seth's line. And when Lamech, different Lamech, had lived to 182 years, he fathered a son, and he called his name Noah, saying, out of the ground that the Lord has cursed, this one will bring us relief from our work and from our painful toil of our hands. This is the one that's going to bring us peace. This is the one that's going to complete something here that God has spoken of. And Lamech lived 777 years. 777. Which is very, if you're reading this, if you're a Jewish person, in a Hebrew, soaked in a Hebrew context, your synapses would be screaming, going, God's doing something. God's doing something. Seven is God's number of fulfillment and completion. Three is also like this perfect number, so it's like perfectly perfect. God's summing up something here in this moment. As Lamech dies, Lamech the better dies, not Lamech the jerk bag. Lamech the better. And so we move from into this time of Noah. And Noah receives a call from God, I think shortly after the death of Lamech. By the way, between the death of Lamech and where we pick up with Noah, you get one of the weirdest stories in the Bible. Because the story of the Nephilim. And I'm not going to talk about it tonight. Instead, I'm going to say, come out on Wednesday night service starting June 12th and raise your hand and ask one of our pastors to talk about what or who the Nephilim were, all right? Read up on it. It's at the beginning of Genesis chapter 6. It's a freaking weird story. And come out and raise your hand and ask us. And if you're lucky, somebody might answer you. All right, I'm ready for that question if I'm teaching that night. But if I'm not, then you get to test Pastor Bruce. Get ready, Pastor Bruce. They're going to ask you. All right. So stuff is spiraling out of control. What you find is that Lamech goes from being essentially the odd man out to being the norm, is what we pick up in Genesis chapter 6 with the story of Noah. We find this. The Lord saw that the wickedness of men was very great in the earth. The wickedness was very great in the earth. And that the intention and thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. Say that. Only evil continually. Ready? Only evil continually. That's a lot of evil. And that's not even what they... That's just every intention. Every thought is evil continually. Verse 6, and the Lord was sorry that he'd made man on the earth, and it grieved him to his heart. So the Lord said, I will blot out them who have created from the face of this land, man and animals and creeping things and birds of the heavens, for I am sorry that I have made them. Now the earth was corrupt in God's sight, and the earth was filled with violence. The earth was filled with violence, stacked full of violence. Lamech has become not the exception, but the rule. And God saw that the earth, and behold, it was corrupt. The earth itself now has become a place of corruption. For all flesh, how much flesh? All flesh had corrupted their way on the earth. And so what we find here is that sin is saturated. That's kind of like my first point here tonight, is what leads us to this place? Sin has absolutely saturated everything. Sin is the removal of God from being God in our lives. It always starts with the intention of our heart. It always starts on the inside. And so I love that it starts in the heart here in Genesis 6, and the description says their intentions are only evil always, but then it starts to move out, and they're people of violence, and they're people of bloodshed, and the earth has become utterly corrupt so that nothing good can be found in it. And it sounds a lot like what we see happening here, except that I believe that here is much better than there. We still live in a world that is violent. Thank God it's not full of violence. We still live in a world of corruption, but thank God it's not full of corruption. And I believe that the things that grieve our hearts as we watch, you know, the news of another shooting in Virginia Beach this past week, the things that grieve us also grieve God. They weigh heavy on his heart. And this sin, it was first and foremost a removal of God from the center of our lives. It was a removal of his dominion, a removal of his authority from the heart of Adam and Eve, and then from the subsequent generations, where now I say that and it sounds ridiculous. If it sounds a little bit crazy to you, that's just because this is the water in which we swim. God has not been center in our hearts for millennia. And we have to fight to recover his centrality in our lives. We have to fight to recover God taking his rightful seat in the throne of our hearts. So he's been removed. It started in the heart. It's where we love something else more than him. It's where we say, my way over your way. And inevitably, this leads to the glorification of ourselves and the subjugation of others. Inevitably, when we make our own feelings, our own heart, our own desires the central motivator and the decider of what is right in our world, when we become the center of the universe rather than God, it inevitably leads to the subjugation of others. Some of us are better at it than others. Some of us are being subjugated more than subjugating. It's wrong. It's evil. It's violence. It's against the heart of God. He's supposed to be the center of our universe, and we've removed him. And so what we find is that things are spiraling out of control and falling apart. What this describes here is deeply, deeply wrong. And it presses in on the heart of God. It grieves him. In verse 6, it talks about how he's grieved, how it brings him incredible sorrow. The Lord regretted that he had made man on the earth, and it grieved him to his heart. This is not a confession of, I didn't see this coming, or, oh my goodness, I cannot believe that things got this bad. But this is a confession of God's feeling in this moment, that he's going to have to do something to make this right, and it's going to hurt. It's going to hurt him. It's going to hurt the earth. I remember when we had a dog, and it got hit by a car. We had to take it to the vet and have it put down. It grieved us. And the fact that we had to do what was right for the dog and what was right and the humane thing to do is painful. And in a way, this is where we find God. He's like, I've got to do something. I've got to do something. I've got to step in. I've got to intervene. And it's come to this place where it grieves me. What grieves you also grieves the heart of God. God is dead set determined for your good. God is dead set determined for to bring about your flourishing and your best. But if you choose, and if we choose to cling on to that which will kill us, he will have to kill us with it. If we are determined to hang on to our own destruction, we will be destroyed with it. And this is where we find the world. They are determined, doggedly determined to hold on to what will destroy them. They're writing songs glorifying the murder of other people for looking at them wrong. And God has to measure out something, and it hurts him, and it grieves him. Though God stands outside of time and makes decisions outside of time, he lives and is involved in the moment also with us. He experiences deep aching and emotions inside of time. God is not some impotent bystander hoping that things will get better, and neither is he some emotionless overlord that is using humanity as puppets. The Bible calls it, he is being imminent and transcendent. He's both imminently involved in what we do in our world. He cares, and he's emotionally involved, but he's also transcendent. He stands outside of time, outside of space, and is able to view it all. It's this extraordinary knife-edge dichotomy, and part of it is being expressed here, not the fullness of it, but part of it is being expressed in that he grieves for what's about to happen here. But don't think for a moment that somehow he's set his transcendence aside. He is the Alpha. He is the Omega. He knew the end from the beginning. Jesus Christ was set apart before the foundation of the earth as a sacrifice for our sins. He's both imminent and transcendent. And in this moment, here in this verse, God is expressing his imminence. He's involved. He's emotionally connected into our lives. All right. It's very difficult to walk that knife edge. So here in this story, what's about to get expressed is God's wrath and grace. And we're going to see both of these things pouring out. I know, that's why you came out tonight, is to learn about wrath. Here's the thing. If you've ever watched something on the news and hated it, you want wrath. And this world needs wrath. We need justice. We need righteousness. We need the goodness of God expressed through this world. We need somebody to come and make things right, because when we try to make things right, typically we just make things worse. Yeah? Typically we just make things worse. I recently sat as a juror and watched this kind of petty crime unfold, and we pronounced this guy who did this thing not guilty of the crimes charged, but certainly guilty of something. And we all kind of left going, wow, you can get away with a lot if you have the right lawyer. Knowing that we'd been played by the lawyer, but also knowing that he was not guilty of the crimes that he was charged, and leaving just very deeply unsatisfied. Right? The more we try to make something right, the worse we can make it. Who's going to make this right? Who's going to stop the spiraling? Who's going to stand up and take responsibility for this mess that we keep making for ourselves? Because when one unrighteous person points their finger at another unrighteous person, it just multiplies. Like when I stand up in my home and say, no, I'm right about this. How well does that go? Yeah, my wife is quick to remind me of all of the things that I've not been right about. Right? And that's what living in community is about developing some humility. Who's going to make this thing right? We need wrath, wrath from God, not wrath from some human, not wrath like in the form of some big bomb that we drop on somebody. No, we need the righteous, good, loving, measured wrath of God. We long for it if we're honest. We desire it. We need it. When we watch the news, we say somebody's got to do something about it. But then the politicians stand up and start going at it. And you go, well, not that guy and not that guy. Yeah, right. We need something bigger. We need something better. So everybody's doing evil all the time. And God says, I'm going to blot out man. I'm sorry that I've made them. And then in verse 8, we read, but Noah found favor in the eyes of the Lord. And then we continue reading in verse 13. It says this, and God said to Noah, I have determined to make an end to all flesh, for the earth is filled with violence through them. Behold, I will destroy them with the earth. Make for yourself an ark out of gopher wood, and make room in the ark to cover it inside and out with pitch. And then verse 17, for behold, I will bring a flood of water upon the earth to destroy all of the flesh with its breath of life under the sun. And I love that he mentions the breath of life. Whose breath is in them? It's the breath of God. It's the Spirit of God that God has put into them. Let's never forget whose life we're living. Yeah, it's my life. It's your life. Your best life now. Yeah, it's God's life. It's God's breath in our lungs. So oftentimes we use the breath that God has put in our lungs to go back against God. And yet he doesn't kill us. Sometimes we've got to marvel at this. Sometimes we've got to wrestle with the holiness, the otherness of God. Not fans of this. That's okay. Trying to do something difficult here tonight. We're going to get to God's love for you. But dear church, we've got to wrestle with the fact that God is very holy. That he is entirely other. That he is burning and stands alone in heaven being worshipped by beings that we do not understand, covered and filled with eyes and wings and sounds terrifying. And all they do all day long is scream holy because they don't understand him. And they've been looking at him for millennia, for millions of years, crying out, holy, 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 because he's entirely different. Because he's like nothing that they've ever seen. Beings filled with eyes send out throughout all the earth, and they come back to him and cry out, holy. Because everything else that they could possibly touch or see in the universe, spiritual or physical, seen or unseen, is created by that being, by that holy God. And as I speak with his breath. And as you breathe with his breath. And as we live with his life. And it's his life that we live, not ours. He's the God. He's the determiner of good and evil, not our emotions, not our feelings, not what we like and dislike. He is the one who decides. So I know that this is not popular, and this is not what New York wants to hear, but this is what New York needs. God is holy. Thank God by his goodness, he loves you and he loves me. All right, so it's, yeah, with everything that was not in the notes, but there we go. The breath under heaven, everything that's under it has the breath of life. Yeah, God's coming to kill. Everything that's on earth shall die. But, here's the second but, I will establish my covenant with you. And you shall come into the ark, you and your sons, and your wife and your sons' wives, you with them, and everything and every living thing of all flesh, you shall bring two of every sort into the ark and keep them alive with you. You shall, and they shall be male and female. Male and female, just how God made them in Genesis chapter 1. God is making it brand new here in Genesis chapter 6. When you read through the Noah story in its entirety, you find a lot of parallel language between Genesis 1 and 2 and Genesis chapter 6, 7, 8, and 9, where the Noah story lives. It's a recreation story, how God's going to make everything new. Praise God. It's not the only recreation story. So what we find here is that God is pouring out wrath and grace through this story. We talked a lot about wrath, but let me reiterate this. Wrath is not God flying off the handle. Wrath is not the slap of a drunk father or the incessant moaning of an annoying mother. It's not God just losing his grip on reality and flying off at you because he had a bad day at work. That is not wrath. Wrath is, however, God's determined, measured decision to destroy everything that wants to destroy you. God's determined and measured decision to destroy everything that wants to destroy you. God wants to end everything that wants to end you. He wants you to flourish. He wants to kill death. He's determined to stop the spiraling. And this should bring us hope and terror. Hope because God is determined to end everything that will end you. And terror because God is determined to end everything that will end you. And wrath brings us hope and terror. And on one hand, we want it and need it. And on the other hand, we cannot handle it. What do we do? God has chosen in this moment to cleanse the earth. And it offends our sensibilities. Wrath kind of, it's good, but it also deeply offends us. And I think that this is good. It's good that we can sit here and be a little bit offended tonight by this story. Because sin is nasty, and wrath is terrible, and we should not want it. We should not want it, but we need it. And so we're stuck here in the middle. Thank God that the story doesn't just end with wrath. It's also filled with grace when you know what you're looking for. It's filled with God's determined goodness all throughout this story. It's filled with grace. It's filled with God's love. It's filled with God's restraint. God has measured, been so measured through all of the stories up until here. Every time God approaches, he approaches with questions. Who told you that you are naked? Have you eaten the fruit? Where are you? Where is your brother to Cain? God approaches time and time and time again, so measured, so loving, so controlled. And this moment is not him flying off the handle. This is his moment where he measures out very tactfully his wrath. And so here it's also cut though with grace. Grace is not this. Grace is not be a good person like Noah. You know, go be a good person like Noah, and then God will not kill you in a flood. That's not grace. And grace is not work hard and God will love you. Grace is not come to church and God will bless you. Grace is not give your tithes and God will give you money back. That is not grace. And in fact, we just don't encounter grace much at all, if ever, outside of the love of God. Grace is this. Grace is God's unmerited, unearned, undeserved desire to bless you. Unmerited, unearned, undeserved desire to bless you. New York is also not a fan of grace. New York is a fan of you work hard, you strive, you give it your all, and maybe if you're lucky, you'll make it. New York knows very little of grace. But God is wrath and grace. God is just totally different. It stands outside of all of the boxes. And we so desperately need grace. Because what we find is that we do deserve wrath. We've set up our little temple around ourselves. We've set up all of our life to serve us so that we're the center of our little universe. We need grace. Oftentimes when you were told the story of Noah, he said, God chose Noah because Noah was a righteous man. Have you heard that? Noah was a righteous man. And that is true. The Bible does say Noah was a righteous man, but it was in summary of the life that he lived that was full of grace. In fact, Noah was just like everybody else, full of sin, full of introspection, full of wanting to please and live the comfortable life for himself. As soon as Noah gets off the ark, he does build an altar, like Bruce said, but also he starts planting grape seeds. And starts growing grape seeds and pressing the juice out of those grapes and fermenting the juice and drinking the juice of the grapes. And then he starts getting naked while he drinks the juice of the grapes. And something crazy, ridiculous that can't even be recorded in scripture starts to happen as he gets naked with the juice of the grapes. Noah gets drunk and naked and starts to really mess up his family because of this. His sin collides with his son's sin, and we don't really know what happens. But we know that he basically messes up in a very big way. You can read it and speculate in your own time. Noah was not just a righteous guy. Noah was a normal guy who God chose. Noah was a guy who obeyed when God called him. God chooses to bless. God chose him for no good reason other than God had a plan and he needed to use somebody. And here tonight, I'm hoping to find a church full of people that will say, God, I don't deserve it. God, I've not earned it. My grades aren't good enough. My marriage isn't good enough. My life isn't good enough. Yeah, I've sinned and I've messed up 1,000 times, but God, if you would use me, I'm here. I'm willing and I'm ready to be used by you. God, would you pour your grace out upon me? God, I don't deserve it. And because of that, I qualify. I'm not the smartest. And because of that, I qualify. I've not got the best paying job. And because of that, I qualify. And tonight, church, if you're just willing to put your hand up and say, God, I'm ready. I'm ready to obey. I'm ready to believe. I'm ready to respond. Then you qualify. You don't need a perfect life to be included in the story of God. You don't need a perfect life to be used by God, to be the next Noah in a good way. You might have certain parts of your life that look like Noah's back half, where he just falls off the rails. Praise God, God can use you. God can use you. He's not scared of that. He's got grace for that. In verse 8, this is the grace moments in Noah's life. God's saying, I'm going to blot out man. I'm sorry that I ever made them. But Noah, there's these grace moments where God just cuts across everything that he's saying, everything that he's doing, and he chooses Noah. He grabs Noah, but Noah found favor in the eyes of the Lord. Later it says, everything that has breath on this earth will die, but I will establish my covenant with you. God's covenants are continually, they're these contractual relationships where we're supposed to do something and God's supposed to do something else. But God knows that we're never going to keep our end of the bargain and ends up just making the full thing for us anyways. What covenant means to New Testament believers, to Christian believers, is a covenant of grace. God doesn't establish a covenant of grace with Noah per se. He does later with Abraham, and there are these covenants that God continues to build, this relationship, this contract that God continues to build, and it gets better and better and better and richer and richer and richer and more and more and more, less about what we're going to do and more about what God's going to do. God's going to do it basically all. All right, so what we see is that God has a better plan. God's building up to a greater and greater and greater plan that I keep alluding to, this covenant of grace, this place that God is going to. And so through Noah is going to come the snake crusher. Through Noah's line, something even greater than Noah is going to come. Because Noah's faithfulness, because Noah built the ark, because Noah got his family onto the ark, something better was able to come through him. And the story keeps pointing outside of itself. It keeps pointing to something greater that's going to come after Noah. As Noah gets off the ark, he builds the altar. God smiles upon the sacrifice that Noah makes. And this is the moment that you get the rainbow moment, right? Like God's saying, I've hung my bow in the clouds as a sign of the peace that's between heaven and earth. It's a little bit odd. And we're, you know, when you've heard of Noah, you think of the rainbow. God, the Bible doesn't actually have the word rainbow, all right? It has the word bow. And we don't interact with bows very much. But they're tools and they're instruments of killing, right? They fire arrows. And God's saying, I've hung my bow in the clouds. Next time I have to fire an arrow, it's not going to be at earth. It's going to be in the heart of heaven. Next time that there's punishment and wrath that needs to be poured out, I'm not going to pour it out on you. I'm going to pour it out on me. Next time that somebody needs to die, instead of taking and choosing one special family and putting them on a wooden craft of salvation and causing destruction to pour across the earth, instead I'm going to choose one son, send him to the earth to die on a wooden craft of torture so that the rest of the world can be saved. I'm going to turn the Noah story absolutely inside out. And that is the grace that you and I now get to receive, is that we are included in the salvation work of God. God's grace has been lavishly poured out to us. God sent his son not to be saved, not to live some special life himself, not to live some comfortable life himself, not to be saved from the world, but God sent his son into the world to die and to be tortured on the cross so that you and I don't have to experience the wrath of God. So that we can live this life somewhere between wrath and grace. So that we can live this life somewhere between heaven and earth. So that we can live this life that only Jesus Christ could give us. Me and you, we get to be included into God's salvation. Our lives have earned wrath, but instead we've received grace. Our lives have earned the anger of God, but instead we've received the blessing of God. Jesus came to live a life that we could not live, to die the death that we deserve, to pour out his grace, his love, his undeserved blessing over all of the earth so that anybody who would just say, yeah, I believe, could be included in his love, could be included in his blessing, could be included in his brand new life. Church, this is the life that we've received tonight. This is the life that we've received, and maybe you've been walking in it for a long time, and I wanted to dive into the gruesome details of this story to hopefully reignite our own salvation, to reignite our own, the fact that we've been included. We're in a wooden craft of salvation, as it were, called the cross of Jesus Christ, that God has included us. Some of us have taken this for granted. Some of us have thought God perhaps doesn't really care about the sin that we see in the world, about the way that I live my life. Perhaps God doesn't really care about this story of righteousness and sin. And what we see in Noah is that God deeply, deeply, deeply cares. He's grieved to his heart over the sin. He's grieved to his heart over the wrath that he's going to have to pour out. And he's also so deeply invested that one day he knows, I'll send my son to turn this Noah story absolutely inside out. If you've been with Christ for a while, do not take this story of God's grace for granted. We can't. We must not. And if you're exploring this faith, then my encouragement is get on board. Get into this thing that God is building. Get into this, say, yes, God, I respond. I want to be included in your salvation. I believe that your son, Jesus Christ, came to this world and he died and he rose again for my sin and for my salvation. Be included. Get in. God's love is for you. God's grace is towards you. He will stop at nothing to try to include you. I'm going to invite the band up here as I close. If you've been in this for a little while, our job, where we go from here, is we take this word out. Says this in 2 Corinthians chapter 5. It says, therefore, we are ambassadors of Christ, God making his appeal through us. We implore you on behalf of Christ, be reconciled to God. Because of the love of God, because of the death of Jesus Christ, we can now say these words. We can now implore this city on behalf of Christ, be reconciled to God. We don't have to talk about God's anger. We can talk about God's love. God's wrath was poured out on Jesus Christ. The wrath we earned, the wrath we deserved, was poured out on Jesus Christ. The right response is to receive it. Receive him with gratitude. Receive him with brand new hearts, willing to stand up and say yes to whatever God has asked of us. We're saved by grace. We're not saved because we earned it. If you earned it, then you could say no. You could say, you know what, I've got a better offer on the table. If you earned it, you could say, you know, I'm going to hold out and see what life brings. But you did not earn it. You did not deserve it. God's grace came into your life because of the very fact that you didn't deserve it. And so now it's for us to respond, to receive.
You've been listening to the Messages Podcast with Every Nation NYC. If you enjoyed our message, please rate and review us on iTunes. It helps others hear the message of Jesus, and we really appreciate it. If you have yet to spend time with us in person, we would love to welcome you to one of our services. Visit everynationnyc.org to find all the info you need to attend a service. We will see you there.